ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So in this portion, how to gain wisdom? We are halfway through in this portion. So far, he is just saying that do's and don'ts doesn't really make a person learn anything. The real outcome of education or knowledge is freedom of choice and choosing wisely. So it's not do's and don'ts. It's not mechanical adherence to external rules and regulations. Once you gain knowledge, automatically you become self-disciplined to that extent. In fact, sign of knowledge is discipline. You know. Now, when you get license from the transport department for driving, a lot of people in India think they are getting license because they know how to drive the car. No, it's how to drive the car under your mind on the road. No, but unfortunately, that's not how I'm sure it's tested in India like that. Abroad, especially in the Middle East and all, when you get license, you, even in your dream, you cannot drive without following the rules. Because first of all, the fines are strict. You may even, for certain things, you may even go to jail, you know. All kinds of things are there. So, and also you won't get licensed that easily. So, when you talk about wisdom, wisdom is not just mere information. Wisdom is going beyond the do's and don'ts and bringing in self-discipline. And it is not to be left to gaining it through mere experience alone. Then everybody who is old should be really wise. But that's not the case. While when a person has gone through enough experience, he or she had got a good amount of opportunity to be wise. But how many of us really become wise after all the experience? So therefore, how to gain the wisdom? Should it be do's and don'ts? No. Should it be just experience? No. Then, most important thing is, you should have awareness of your ignorance. There should be that curiosity and interest to learn, which you will have when you understand that I really don't know. Only to the extent you understand that I don't know, to that extent you would want to know. You would submit yourself to know. You will keep your ego under check and then really seek the knowledge. So therefore he says, you must have that awareness. And he quotes Josh Billings and says, the trouble with most folks is not so much their ignorance, but their knowing so many things which ain't so. So the problem is knowing. The problem is not ignorance. So what is a big obstacle for gaining knowledge? Knowledge itself. Now, when we say your knowledge or your existing knowledge is the obstacle in gaining knowledge, then that existing knowledge has to be qualified. What kind of knowledge would become an obstacle in gaining fresh knowledge? Anybody? Do you follow the question? In this portion he says, and he quotes Josh Billings who says, the trouble with most folks is not so much their ignorance, but their knowing so many things which ain't so. He puts the knowing within inverted commas. So the problem is not ignorance. The problem is knowledge. Already I know. Mujhe pata hai. So, how is this existing knowledge an obstacle in gaining fresh knowledge?
Because then ego makes you close up and you're not open.
Okay.
What you think you know it all, so your ego is, takes over.
Okay. What else? It is unquestioned knowledge. It is unverified knowledge. It's a knowledge that even if you have verified, it was in the past. So if you really are a person who is knowledgeable, you will always put your previous knowledge into present context and then understand how much you know, how much you don't. See, we are in a world which is constantly evolving. You understand? So you got to also, along with the time, evolve. So therefore, you will always understand that knowledge is something that you got from the past. Maybe after questioning, maybe without questioning. And very often, we gain the knowledge without questioning. Simply, we have taken it from the past generation, elders or so, and then we haven't questioned it and we think we know. You understand? Now, if you are questioned, if you are a person who gained the knowledge using your buddhi, then you will constantly ask if my existing knowledge is still valid in the present context or not. You understand? Like in computer field, if you, I don't know what is the syllabus now. Those days in plus one, plus two, and then when you go to this college, when you study programming, they'll say C++. Now, I don't know what all is there now. You understand? Where they've gone. Now, you have to, of course, the basics you should know, but you have to constantly keep on evolving. You think I know, then you will not grow. So that's what he's saying. Your past knowledge very often is unquestioned. Unquestioned knowledge. And it should not be made stagnant. The knowledge should be dynamic as well as you are living in the world, which is also dynamic and not stagnant. You are not living in a world which is static, right? You are living in a world which is dynamic. So how can you have a static knowledge? It has to be dynamic. You have got to constantly question from the present context. And then you have to continue. So all this will be a big hindrance if you say, I already know, I don't want to keep in pace with time, you know. And also, that's why he says, you know, acquisition of knowledge is not mere cramming of information. Today, a lot of people just cram the information and then, or just Google, and then think whatever Google says is correct. Need not necessarily be. So you need to question it. So he says the basic concept of education is lost. Nobody questions. Educate means to eke out, to draw out. You need to draw it out through questions. No. In fact, very few schools are there in the world today, especially in India, who have this kind of education. I saw one in Chandigarh. I forget the name of the school. Very few students are there in the school. And there is no proper class going on there. Children are exposed to different things and through the questioning they are taught. You know, like that, very few schools are there where you really learn through questioning. You got to keep the curiosity going. See, today, when you give the information before even the question comes, you have quenched the fire. You understand? You've quenched the fire. It's like, around 1 o'clock, you're having coffee. How will you have hunger? You will not have hunger. You understand? You had breakfast and then in between you had 2-3 coffees, especially one very close to 1 o'clock, 1:30, then how will you have hunger? You will not have hunger. So, exactly the same thing we are doing. Today we are in a world where we are bombarded with information. We also go and bombard with information, a lot of unwanted information, a lot of information which actually should not be contacted, which will agitate us, all that we take, and then there is not much space for the real knowledge to go in. So what is happening is the curiosity is quenched. Then how will you learn? You understand? Real learning is only through questioning. You got to keep your curiosity going. You got to keep your imaginations going. Then only you learn. So, that's what he's trying to say here. And then he quotes Lord Buddha. With that only we concluded, I think. So, where Lord Buddha very clearly says, do not believe what you have heard. Do not believe doesn't mean you don't accept. Acceptance after questioning, that's what he wants to say. Do not believe what you have heard. Do not believe in tradition because it is handed down many generations. Do not believe in anything that has been spoken of many times. Do not believe because the written statements come from some old sage. Do not believe in conjecture. Do not believe in authority or teachers or elders. But after careful observation and analysis, when it agrees with reason and it will benefit one and all, then accept it and live by it. So first of all, the careful observation and analysis. Then it should agree with reason. Then it should benefit one and all, including yourself. Then only accept it and then put it into practice. This is the way to gain knowledge. So continue, please. Read from so much spiritual knowledge.
Should I read?
Yeah, please.
So must spiritual knowledge be taken in regulated doses. If not, the knowledge passes through you without producing the desired effect. You could be well versed in scriptural literature and not turned spiritual. All the sacred information that you gather may not bring about a transformation in your personality. Spiritual books read, or discourses heard could make you a scholar at best. You may even author spiritual books, give religious discourses, and yet remain far from being spiritual. Spiritual growth is measured by the stability of mind. An unstable mind, perturbed in the fluctuations of the external world, lacks the elements of spirituality. Such a mind is like milk, watery and easily flowing, whereas a stable mind resembles yogurt, thick and does not run. The process of preparing yogurt out of milk is strikingly similar to making a person spiritual.
Yeah, so he says first and foremost, the information we seek should be in regulated doses. No? Like you take in medicine. Now, if the medicine is taken without keeping the dosage in mind, the doctor has given you 3 tablets a day, morning, noon and night for 10 days. You say, I may forget. So let me take all the 30 together. You understand? Now, you can't do that. You know that when it comes to medicine. But in knowledge, it has to be in proper, regulated dosage. That is the idea behind having these classes also once a week. Once a week or once a day, or if you are in the ashram kind of an environment, maybe twice a day. But in between, a lot of time for you to put in the effort to assimilate. See, when we say once a week we meet, the rest of the week it doesn't mean you relax, which is what mostly happens. But ideally speaking, the rest of the week you sit and think, question how, why, what, when, and then compare it and contrast it with your experiences of the past or other person's experience through your observation, then you see, yes, this is a fact. Once you imbibe knowledge like that, it won't leave you. It's yours now. Because you worked on it. It's yours. You know, in the, you know, if you're a writer, there is something called as plagiarism. You know, people just simply copy somebody else's books and then sell it as if it's theirs. So, you may say the same story the other person has said, but if you've digested that story, you will present it in the way which is original to you. It's not like you should not say the same story. If that story conveys the message very well, why not? You can say the same story, but you will convey it in your own because it's coming from within you. Otherwise, you'll just mechanically repeat it. So therefore, he says, in regulated dosage. And when the knowledge goes in that way, then it will bring a stability in your head. You'll become more balanced, especially in spiritual education. Because we are talking about that primarily. If you are a person who's gaining wisdom, to that extent, you should be moving from tamas to rajas to sattva. Your mind should become more and more balanced, serene, composed. If it's going to be more agitated, more indecisive, you know, erratic, then you have not got wisdom. You might have excellent information, you are an information bank maybe, and you are a person who is well versed in communicating in a particular language, English or Hindi or whatever language, and therefore you may give good lectures, but that's not the idea. The idea is your mind should be stable. Unstable mind, perturbed in fluctuations of external world, lacks the elements of spirituality. So the sign of wisdom is stable mind. You understand? The balanced mind. That is important. Not thrown away by the whims and fancies of life, by the attractions of life, by the changes in life. Good, bad, ugly situations should not be able to topple you. Then you can say you are a knowledgeable person. You are a wise person. Otherwise you are just an information bank. So that's why he says, a stable mind resembles yogurt. Thick and does not run. Whereas the unstable mind is like liquid milk. You know, stable mind is like yogurt. It's thick and balanced. The process of preparing yogurt out of milk is strikingly similar to making a person spiritual. How to gain wisdom in spiritual field? He explains it through this example of converting milk into yogurt. Continue, please.
It has been an age-old tradition among the Indians to make yogurt in their homes. To prepare yogurt, milk is first heated to boiling point and left to cool to lukewarm temperature. A small portion of yogurt left over for the purpose is then mixed with the milk. The mixture is left overnight. By next morning, the thin runny milk is converted into thick formed yogurt. In a similar process, a seeker initially goes through the challenges of life. Later, he chooses a relatively peaceful place for spiritual practice. Not the heat of the marketplace, nor the cool heights of the mountain. That is indicated by bringing the milk to lukewarm temperature. The little yogurt of yesterday represents a measured daily dose of Vedanta knowledge left behind by the sages. That is added and stirred. The spiritual truths taken in have to be reflected upon. The overnight period that the yogurt takes to set indicates that the seeker adds a length of time, needs a length of time for the knowledge to seep in. Adopting this procedure, the individual emerges with a sound, stable mind. The stability of mind marks his spiritual evolution.
What he's saying is, you bring the milk to a lukewarm condition. You boil it. Don't keep it too hot or keep it too cold to make yogurt. Bring it to a lukewarm condition. And then in that lukewarm milk, you add little jamun. And then leave it overnight. The milk will get converted into yogurt. So now what we need to understand here is, milk is compared to your mind. If your mind is exposed to too much of experience, it's like hot milk. From morning till night, you are terribly involved in the worldly activities. Then that mind is not so conducive to taking the knowledge and convert it into wisdom. When you sprinkle water on a hot plate, what happens? It simply evaporates. Similarly, a person who is so preoccupied, it is difficult for the person to gain wisdom. So that's why we say you have to become lukewarm. If you're too cold, then it's tamasic. You know. So you should neither be someone who doesn't have any experience whatsoever, nor you should be someone who is fully involved in experiences, very busy running after acquisition and enjoyment. You should be relatively sattvic. Not too rajasic, nor too tamasic. And such a person takes in little knowledge every day, in the early hours of the day especially, and then leave it throughout the day. Leave it in the sense, when you take in the knowledge in the early hours of the day, let's say 4 to 6, any time between 4 and 6, for an hour, you sit and study. Let's say, for example, this portion we are studying. What do you do? You question, why is he saying so, what happened, etc., etc. For 1 hour, you thought about these paragraphs. Now, you have taken in X amount of knowledge after questioning. Now, throughout the day, you go and work in your office, in your home, everywhere. You face challenges. So this knowledge that you imbibe in the morning is now going to react with your experience through the day. Like the jamun that is added to the milk is going to react with it throughout the day. This will react and the questioned knowledge gone through the process of experience throughout the day now settles down as wisdom in you. You understand? So that's why we say you should have little exposure, not too much exposure. You should not be someone who doesn't have any exposure also. Because, for example, in spiritual field, a quotation which very often I quote, which is by Swami Ramtirtha, it says, iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. It's a beautiful statement. But if you are very cold, you have very little experience. You are tamasic also. You want to just laze around, enjoy the wealth created by your parents or grandparents. Yeah. Then you will quote this. Iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. And then you go and sit in cold storage. Do nothing. You're not really having the detachment, honestly speaking. So, therefore, you say no. Go out in the field. Go out to the world. It's all very easy to say. You should not get angry. You know, to be in the marketplace, experience dukkha, everywhere or wherever, and then not get angry. Then there is some maturity in you. Sitting at home, anybody can speak philosophy. You don't need, books for it. Guru for it. So therefore, you can't be zero experience. Can't be tamasic. Nor you are too much in the world. The statement, iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold, will go like bouncer over your head. You won't be able to understand fully, focus fully. So therefore we say, zero experience doesn't work. Too much into the world also doesn't work. Too much in the world, okay, leave that fellow alone. That person kind of, sobers. He or she will come to the knowledge. Then we'll see. So that's why he says the milk should be lukewarm, not too cold, not too hot. And to that milk, you add little jamun. Information has to be in dosage. And then leave it overnight in a sense. Allow that knowledge to react with your daily experience. Then you will see. Then the knowledge settles down. That is wisdom. That is wisdom. Continue. It will bring stability of mind, he says.
Religious practitioners have not been following the prescribed procedure for spiritual development. They merely run through volumes of scriptural literature, and they do so alongside their material and sensual indulgences. Give no time nor put in any effort to think, contemplate upon the matters therein. Consequently, they do not assimilate, absorb the knowledge taken in. All the accumulated knowledge becomes a burden rather than a blessing. No more useful to them than gold on a mule's back is to the mule.
The gold on the mule's back is of no use. The gold is not, the value of the gold is not known by the mule. You understand? Exactly what is happening to most of us. We don't really understand the value. They are simply taking it from one place to another without really understanding what this knowledge can do to us. See, the greatest thing that this knowledge will do to you is, in any situation, you will never sell yourself. You will never mortgage yourself. The biggest curse on humanity throughout the world, when they don't gain this knowledge properly, is that in some form or the other, they are compromised. And to the extent you digest this knowledge, you will never compromise when it comes to that. Life will be not for sale. You will say life not for sale. You will never ever compromise on that. So that's the main thing, isn't it? So, therefore he says, in today's context, hardly anybody is taking in knowledge like this. A lot of people think they just go to some temple, church or mosque, they have done their bit. Or they just heard somebody speak, good. Or they carry some book and then continue reading, being good. Therefore, he says, that's not going to work. Merely running through volumes of scriptural literature doesn't make you spiritual. And not only that, you continue but have a lifestyle which is absolutely indulgent. Absolutely indulgent lifestyle you have. And then little, it's like, till 10:55 you gamble. Just giving an example. 1 o'clock, suddenly, okay, let's start the class. Then class, one ke baad, teen patti, you understand? immediately you want to start again. So what knowledge you'll go in? It becomes very mechanical. So all he's trying to say is, if you really are interested in this knowledge to become wisdom in you, some amount of sadhana you should do. You should have some basic changes in your lifestyle. If you don't do that, then it's difficulty. Therefore, he says, they merely run through volumes of scriptures and they also do so alongside their material and sensual indulgence. Give no time, nor put in any effort to think, contemplate upon the matter therein. Who could claim to have gone through the scriptures properly, you tell me? At your convenience, you would want to go read and not really put in any effort to question why, what, where. So therefore he says, they don't assimilate, absorb the knowledge taken in. All the accumulated knowledge becomes a burden rather than a blessing. When you digest the food, it becomes part of you. But if you're carrying the same food on your head in a tiffin box, it's heavy. This is what is happening. The knowledge goes in, brings about transformation, you become light. You become light-hearted. But when the knowledge doesn't go in, this information becomes a burden. Continue, please.
Whereas with the proper intake of spiritual knowledge, you rise from a physical, sensual person to emotional, to intellectual, to spiritual. People the world over have been denied spiritual education. As a result, they are steeped in ignorance and preoccupied with accumulating material wealth and indulging in their senses, not realizing that wealth and senses can provide only a false sense of peace and pleasure. As a person acquires spiritual knowledge, he rises from the physical to the emotional level. He is no more victimized by material and sensual demands. His physical pleasures are shadowed by the joys of the mind. Thus, continuing to acquire more knowledge, he develops intellectual clarity and awareness, which provides him satisfaction and solace superior to joys of the mind or pleasures of the body. The culmination of knowledge reaches the seeker to the Supreme Self, the abode of absolute peace and bliss. The ultimate spiritual experience is like blazing sunlight before all other lights.
So when you are in spiritual evolutionary process, you will move from material to physical, to emotional, to intellectual, to spiritual. From the periphery, you move to the core, to the center. Initially, you appreciate things that are gross. Slowly, once you are exposed to the subtler aspects of life, vis-a-vis the gross aspects that you've been appreciating, you understand that it is frivolous. The gross aspects are frivolous. You may have to transact with them for certain things, but your real identification will be with the subtlest. That's all he's trying to say. So your values change, isn't it? Anything for that matter, when you really understand literature, for example, today in the name of literature, all kinds of nonsense goes. But if you really understand literature, then you will have value for classical literature. Similarly, dance form, for example, there is classical. Singing also, classical. A lot of singers who have not trained in classical, Hindustani or Karnataka, whatever, they're good singers. But you go to a person who is very well trained in Hindustani or Carnatic or Western, whatever, but classical, when that person, after all the training, comes up, the way they deal with music is completely different. Because they've gone through the rigors, they've gone through the process, they've gone through the foundation, the fundamental. So, when you have really got the wisdom, then you will understand the superficial aspect of the gross things in life. You can't continue appreciating it and mortgaging your time entirely for it. That is called growth, right? When you were a small child, you had enough time for all frivolous stuff. When you grow, how do you measure that growth? You have no time for frivolous things now, or very little time. You start appreciating time where you were appreciating money before. Isn't it? Earlier you appreciated money, now you'll appreciate time. Earlier you were appreciating certain times, but now you'll appreciate sattvic time. The values change. The way you think change. That's what he's saying. You move from material to physical, to emotional, to intellectual, to spiritual. You become a solid person, well grounded. Move from the periphery, circumference, to the center, to the core, which is the absolute peace, abode of absolute peace and bliss is it. When you are in the circumference, more and more you will want, and you get also maybe working, and still you feel dissatisfied. But when you go deeper and deeper into your personality, you will become more contented. You will become more contented with what you have and always ready to serve. So there is a beautiful combination of dynamism and peace. That is a sign of spiritual growth. That's what it is. The ultimate spiritual experience is like blazing sunlight before all other lights. Once you start appreciating being yourself, you cannot be somebody else for some gain, external gain. Not possible. In Akbar's court, Tanzim was there. Once Akbar asked Tanzim, are you the best singer in the country or are there better ones? He said, I am nothing. There is another person who is far superior. Who is it? My guru. I think his name is Haridas Ji. Acha? Can you call him tomorrow? I want to listen to him. Tanzim laughed and said, listen, he will not come here. If you want to listen to him, we have to go there, where he is. You are really interested? Come. Then Akbar said, yes, let's go. And when they went, from distance, Tanzim said, that is my guru. So he said, okay, let's go there, meet him and then ask him to sing for us. He said, he will not sing like that. You wait. When he sings, you hear. So when Haridas Ji sang after some time, Akbar and Tanzim both were mesmerized. And Akbar said, you are right, Tanzim. You are nothing compared to him. But why is this? What is the difference? He said, I sing for you, the emperor on earth. He sings for the emperor of the world, God, Nobody else. You understand? You do things for padartha, you do things for atmartha. There's a difference. You know? Padartha, padam, you understand, no, in Sanskrit. The objects. For some material gain, some promotion, for a better vacation. But those kind of things, when you start doing, you feel somewhere you are a slave. That eats you. Isn't it? That eats you. You cannot continue like that. Even if you continue, inside you are like termites eating the wood. You will be like that. When termites eat the wood, I don't know whether you have seen, experienced it. You won't know sometimes. From outside you see it's nice. Once you find out, inside it's all shallow. It's eaten the whole stuff in. So we are like that. That's what he says. Your dependence on the outside factors reduces as you start establishing yourself in the inside. For that to happen, you have to follow this procedure. You want the information to be just an embellishment in your life, it's a different thing. But if you really want that knowledge to make you solid, then it's different. So that's why he says, compared to all other lights, this is blazing sunlight. Continue, please.
The ignorance of self-knowledge makes the life of a person rough and rugged. The trial and tribulations of the world produce worry and anxiety. He remains in a state of stress. But as he chooses to gain more and more knowledge, he frees himself gradually from mundane persecution. Thus, pursuing the self is like rising up in a balloon. Pursuing the self, he reaches the state of enlightenment. The entire experience is like rising up in a balloon. On the ground, one feels the ruggedness of the surface. Rising even a little above the surface, the humps and the bumps are gone. Gathering more height, even hills and valleys make no difference. And at the highest point, everything is smooth and graceful. So does the enlightened feel absolute peace and bliss in the zenith of spirituality.
So the more and more you rise in spiritual field, spiritually you evolve, the less and less you are perturbed by the material world. The things that used to disturb you don't disturb you anymore to the same extent, or don't disturb you at all. Either they don't disturb you, or they definitely don't disturb you to the same extent. So, this is one of the most important things we have to keep in mind to check our spiritual evolution, whether we are evolving or not. To what extent are you getting affected by the happenings around you? Material level, physical level, emotional level, intellectual level. Somebody calls you an idiot. How much are you getting affected by? You understand? So, all this, he says, like rising in a balloon. So what happens? As you go higher and higher, the differences get sorted out, no? When the flight is on the ground, you see the tall building and short building. Now, once the flight goes up and up and up, all buildings come to the same level from your perspective. So the worst of criticisms, the best of appreciation, nothing topples you. You may get excited by best of appreciation or get dejected by the worst criticisms. But once you gain this knowledge, you'll be balanced in both. Continue, please.
Those who remain in ignorance complain of iniquity and injustice prevailing in the world, that wickedness is rampant everywhere. The innocent are being deceived and harassed by the vicious. People wonder why the dishonest prosper while the honest suffer. This has been the general grievance everywhere. Few have attempted to analyze and investigate the cause for it. The layperson meekly resigns it to fate, without realizing that there is a reason for this paradox in life. The good suffering at the hands of the bad. A careful scrutiny will show that it rises from the distinctions in the nature of their inner personalities. The ones with a weaker constitution suffer. The solution lies in fortifying the weak. One needs to study the inner constitution, reflect over it, and strengthen this intellect. Having developed a strong intellect, one becomes equipped to deal with the treacherous practices in the world.
See, instead of gaining this knowledge, if you remain ignorant, how are you going to deal with the iniquities he is asking? You will be complaining of iniquity and injustice. Jesus Christ says, iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. You should not be the cause of iniquity. Then you will have to face the wrath of karma. But if you are not the cause of it, but iniquity will be there. But in all these iniquities, you have the capacity to be stable. For that, you should have made certain inner adjustments through knowledge. If you have not made those inner adjustments through knowledge, then you will be taken by surprise. And then blame the world for it. So therefore, you need to understand how the world functions. Your mind, your inner personality, the true personality which is beyond all this, and then deal with it. That is the example. So he says, wickedness is rampant everywhere. Innocent are being deceived and harassed by the vicious. So what is the solution for this? He says, you must strengthen yourself from within. There is no other choice. Now, the same thing, practically speaking, for example, when you and me were going to school in the past, we did not have the same kind of challenges our children or grandchildren have today. There is drug menace. You understand? Exposure to internet, especially to all kinds of wrong things, which can rob their focus and concentrating ability. So now, what can we do? Should we not send them to schools and colleges then? Is it better not to go to school? What do we have to do? We have to sit and talk to them about these things. Either we ourselves or through counselors. Proper channel. Make them strong. Make them understand. When they go, and if they confront such a situation, they know how to deal with it. You can't deny and then push it under the carpet and say such a thing doesn't exist. There is no need for any exposure. No. You need to very carefully, with guidance, expose them. Otherwise, they will get wrong ideas and information from wrong sources. This is very important. So, the solution lies in fortifying the weak. I'm explaining that. When he says the solution lies in fortifying the weak, first I have to understand I am weak. Otherwise, I'll be blaming the world. You know, ne mujhe dhoka de diya, aisa ho gaya. You know, I voted to them in all good faith. But see, you know, you may blame the politicians, you may blame the administrators. We have to be strong from within. You have to strengthen your intellect. You cannot blame anybody. You need to have your intellect strong. For that you need to work. Otherwise, obviously you will be taken for a ride. I remember one gentleman told me in Abu Dhabi, he said, you know, these people, many of them, they go abroad, especially to these Middle East countries, so that they could save some money for the family and for themselves. They sacrifice a lot. Not everybody gets an opportunity to be with their family there. Many of them stay alone. I mean, meet the family only once in 2 years. They work hard. They save as much as they can. And some of these fellows who go from India in the name of this opportunity and that opportunity, go and talk to them about, you know, you invest in this, we will give you this much return, that much return. So some, many of these fellows, they fall for it. Some of them are genuine, but many of them are crooks. They are not really going to give them that much return. Even you should think, na, how you will get that much return. You have to think. You fall for the greed, then what to do? So, I know one case where one guy was, one guy was cheated. He has invested some money, it's gone. Some tree plantation, something like that. Huge amount he lost, few lakhs he lost. I'm talking about 20 years ago, few lakhs was a lot of money. You understand? And this guy, we started our classes. He came and told me one funny story. So what happened, like him, there are thousands of people who have lost money to that company in Middle East and in India and everywhere else. So those days, they all got in touch with each other through email. That's how we form WhatsApp groups nowadays. So they formed email groups. Somehow, you know, I'll know somebody who's also lost money. Then they'll know somebody. So like that, they all came together and they formed one group. So one fellow amongst the group said, if each one of us file separate case against them, we won't have enough money to fight against them. Let's all pull up some money and, engage a lawyer and then fight against that company. So it made sense. So they all pulled up the money and they made that fellow in charge. He took the money and ran away. You understand? They were already cheated ones. This fellow was one of them. But that fellow understood one thing. I was a fool, like all these people there. That fellow cheated. I am learning something. These fellows are still not learning something. He cheated them by taking all that money. Now, I am not saying what he did is correct or wrong. But then, if you say, hey, this fellow also gave me dhoka. Who asked you to be a fool? You continue to be a fool. You understand? And then say, that fellow gave the, of course, for the sin, he will pay. But why are you being stupid? Should you not make your insight strong? Should you not think, hey, Baba, I was taken for a ride once. Now at least I should be careful. So that's what he said. The solution lies in fortifying the weak. What is weak in me? My buddhi. And buddhi has to be strengthened. Instead of strengthening the buddhi and compensating by having a library at home. Or I'm compensating by becoming a member in a library. Right? Simply because you become a member in a library or Vedanta class. Because I have become a member of Vedanta. Everything taken care of. Right? Who said? You have to make your insight strong. Your head has to be fortified. So you need to gain this knowledge. Otherwise, you will be finished. So all he wants to say is, later on he will talk about the topic, next topic is the aggressive and the passive. See, in Vedanta we say aggressive, passive. Aggressive not in the way the world understands. Aggressive means one who uses thinking. one is capable of thinking. Passive means one who doesn't think. So we say in the world today, it is not enough being good. You have to be an original thinker. And of course be good. But just being good is not enough. If you are a non-thinker, you will be taken for a ride. Nobody can do anything about it. And then say, hey, I've been good only. What has happened to me? Your mind is pure, but what about your intellect? The intellect also has to be sharp. Mind has to be pure. No doubt. And a lot of people, in the name of good, they're just out of mechanical conditioning, have picked up certain values and they remain good from that sense. Like for example, you might have not picked up any bad habits. You know, you may not have any smoking, drinking, or speak foul language. Okay, fine, you don't have good habits. Bad habits. What about it? If you're not a thinker, every day I go to mandir, theek hai. But you're not a thinker. You'll be taken for a ride. You need to therefore ask questions, strengthen your buddhi. That's what he's trying to say. You are passive, you will suffer. If you are aggressive, you will not suffer. If you are aggressively good, then you will not suffer at all. So we need to move from being passive to aggressive. From non-thinker to thinker. So we need to strengthen the intellect. That is what he talks about. So next week we'll take up this topic, aggressive and passive. Let's conclude now. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti. Om Aina Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakrite Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami. See you all next week.